You are listening to the Photo Bomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photo Bomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
Yes, I am. I'm here. Not happy about it, but I'm here.
You're not happy. You are not happy about being here, Gary, because in theory, you should not be here, and neither should I.
Right. Well, just to catch everybody up, we just did this past weekend the Photobomb Live at Focus 2018, which went very, very well.
Huge.
We had a great time.
I just received a picture moments ago of the audience. Just buckled over with laughter, uproarious, just almost like they're faking it. They're laughing so uproarious at our antics. It was a huge success.
Well, there's photographic evidence that we, in fact, are funny.
Yes, yes. Unfortunately, there is no audio evidence.
The audio was, long story short, look, I think enough people have listened to us for long enough to know that I am, when it comes to audio and video engineering, I am mediocre at best. And so until we're at some point where we can have somebody who knows what they're doing taking care of this stuff for us, you're just going to have to deal with me occasionally screwing everything up.
There's always going to be the risk that this podcast will never see the light of day. That's just something that every single episode, there's that risk. I almost didn't hit the record button on this one.
The reason this is going to be the length of time between episodes is because we recorded a great episode with guest Hannah Marie, came back on the show to talk about her educational stuff, and that audio is completely screwed. So
That it was two weeks in a row.
Two weeks in a row, the audio has been completely and I was gonna go through and find the good bits of the live show and make a little clip thing out of it, at least get the stuff that was usable. But no, there's not. There's not 30 seconds of usable footage in the entire recording.
Oh,
so my apologies to those of you who've been waiting to do this. I promise I will do my homework and put more of an effort in next time we do a live show. I can't promise that I'm going to get any better at this because I just have toddlers and a business to run. So anyway, sorry, but that's why we're here, and it's Wednesday, and we normally record on the weekend, and so we're getting an extra episode in just so we can deliver you some content this week because there is a ton to talk about in the world of photography news. But before we do that,
I also want to point out that even I said when we were finished, you know, people were like, "That was great. That's a great podcast," and I was like, "No, that was a great live performance, but it's actually not going to be a very good podcast." And they were like, "Oh, stop it." And I said, "No, trust me on this." Like, when I'm listening to a podcast, a lot of times when you do a live performance, because there's so much going on in the room that's visual, you know what I mean? It's not, it's great to listen to it when you were there.
Yeah, I genuinely don't love the live episodes of podcasts that I listen to.
Because you need to be there because people are laughing. You know what they're laughing at, you know, because So I guess I'm not trying to say you're not missing much, but I'm just saying that you know, there's always with a live podcast, there's a lot of applause breaks. You know,
well, it works.
You know,
it works in reverse. You know how there's a big podcasting is probably the biggest medium right now for stand-up comics because so many. I mean, and I listen to some great ones, some of the most popular in the world. And you've got Joe Rogan, and if you didn't know, Joe Rogan's a stand-up comic and a great stand-up comic, and he's got one of the most popular podcasts in the world. Mark Maron has one of the most popular podcasts in the world. Adam Carolla has one of the most popular podcasts. Some of the most popular podcasts out there are stand-up comics, and it is just right down the line. Almost any stand-up comic that's working, that's touring, has a podcast. And so I did this recently. I went to see Joey Diaz. Joey Diaz is a stand-up comic who's like basically your crazy grandpa telling stories. It's not artful. He basically just – he's this old stoner grandpa from New York who sounds like he's Italian, but I'm pretty sure he's Cuban. And anyway, long story short, he he has a is on Joe Rogan's podcast all the time, and they have all these inside jokes. So many inside jokes. If a comic has a podcast, they get all of these jokes, all of these callbacks, and half of the stand-up show is now callbacks for their podcast audience. Because half of the people in right. the show, this was in Salt Lake City, half of the people in the room were avid listeners and know him from Joe Rogan's podcast.
Right.
And so does it ruin the live show for people who aren't podcast listeners to go and see a comic that they really like when half the time they're playing to their podcast audience?
I don't know.
Or people in the audience who listen to the podcast are calling out like funny gags from the show and the comics. I was like, okay, yeah, yeah, we get it. You're here. I still have to do this routine.
Yeah, I still have to do stuff for people who have never heard the podcast. But in that same vein, I do want to move on, but we do need to take a moment to talk about Bure's Descent into Madness Bingo.
Oh, this is yeah.
Because this was the most incredible thing that anyone has ever done, that in my opinion, who was a fan of the show.
Right, and not discounting those of you who have done and sent us things and sent us nice letters and gifts even or made T-shirts, but this was great. This was Leslie Evans, who is a listener of the show. I want to say advance thank you, Leslie. Got in touch with me a couple of weeks ago, and she was going to be at the live recording at Focus 2018. And since, if you've listened to past episodes, for the last probably 8 or 9 episodes, I've been making this joke that when Bure goes on a rant, I say, for those of you playing Bure's Descent into Madness Bingo, mark off this square or whatever. And so she picked up on that and sent me a message on Facebook and said, do you think it would be funny if I made bingo cards for Bure's Descent into Madness Bingo, and people in the audience were playing Bure's Descent into Madness Bingo, and Bure didn't know that it was happening until somebody yelled bingo and like ran up. So not only I said, absolutely, that's a fantastic idea, are you kidding? So she went and she made the cards, but to make the squares on the cards, she had to go back, and she's been listening but nothing not to nothing but the Photobomb podcast,
yes,
for like a couple of weeks, going back through our whole catalog to come up with good ideas for squares.
Yeah, she hasn't been listening to a couple of weeks worth of the show. She went back and listened to 70 episodes.
So she could come up with
what are the things that he rants about the most and put them on the bingo card. And so she had all these rants on the bingo card. And I had no idea it was going on until someone screamed bingo and then brought the card up. And I was just, oh my God, that was hilarious. And then, you didn't know, she also made one for you called Rocket Man My Ass.
Rocket Man My Ass Bingo. And it was all stuff that I rant about on there.
And it was just, it was the greatest compliment that anyone could have paid to us to go to so much trouble and to listen to so many episodes of this show. I'm so sorry for that.
Hats off to you, Leslie. That was such a great idea and well executed, and we love it and we love you. That was really fun. Thank you for putting that together.
We both seem a little bit slow today. There's a little bit of post-convention
weekend,
come down going on, I think.
Well, because you didn't jump immediately into an angry rant, I assume that we're feeling a little
exactly. I'm ranted out. Well, I was able to rant in person for 3 days to everyone I encountered. Now I'm taking the 7th day to rest, and then I'll be back tomorrow.
Like why has everyone blocked me on Facebook? I don't understand. The convention was great, though. Thanks to everybody who came out to the live show. That was a lot of fun and met a lot of Photobomb listeners. There are more than one, surprise.
Yes.
And they're not all middle-aged and older men, so that's fantastic. It's good to know that. So thank you, guys. Really need to meet everybody who was there and had a really good time. And I am exhausted. As you see, I'm even still a little bit hoarse because at the awards ceremony, Bure won several awards, including the prestigious PPA National Award for Service to the Photographic Industry. And I was screaming at the top of my lungs pretty consistently for about two hours, like obnoxious frat boy yelling over everyone else in the crowd.
Yes, screaming. When they announced my name, you were loud and clear. It was you. There was no doubt that Gary was sitting behind me.
I kept screaming, "Year of the Boo! It's a year of the Boo!" And it was. It was the year of the Boo. You took home some great awards. So congratulations!
I had some good
print
awards this year. I had a couple of best in shows, which was fun and fantastic. But the national award was the greatest honor I have ever received in my life, and the most humbling thing that has ever happened to me. So I was
hashtag humbled, hashtag blessed.
I was very humbled by that, because they had the other national award winners come up to the front of the stage when you received the award, And you're looking up there and you're going, well, every one of those people is a heavy hitter. You know, every one of those people is not only a great photographer, but those are the people who have been around forever, you know, and have been like Robin was up there. And I was looking at the old books from the old convention, and there was a clipping in there of a story, and there's Robin's headshot talking about he was a convention manager that year, and it was 1992.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So, you know, these are the kind of people who have received this award, and I just never really would have thought in a million years that I deserved to be in that company. So it was
quite humbling. Now, the story behind this is great. Because to get Bure to go to the awards ceremony at all, there was a conspiracy of people lying to him and told him basically that I was the one getting the award and that he needed to be there for me. So he's sitting there, and what they do when they give away an award is they start to read off all these facts about the person before they tell their name. Like, they joined the association in 2000.
It's a game.
Whenever.
They're going to read all this stuff, and now you're listening and thinking, okay, who is this? Who is this person?
And after about five or six things, you go, crap, that's me. And then you know it's you.
But the thing is great about this is that you and I have a lot of the same things. Oh, he's traveled extensively and spoken at state organizations and all of the local guilds. And I'm like, yeah, that's Gary. And when I knew was when they said he is a craftsman photographer, a craftsman photographer,
certified.
A CPP. And in my head, I was like, and a master photographer. And then they didn't say that. And that was when I literally let out an expletive. That was when I literally went, oh, because I realized it's me. Because they would have said master photographer if it was Gary.
Well,
and I'm not technically a master photographer until January.
Until January, yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, so I'm glad that worked out. And thanks to all the co-conspirators. I even used the world famous Gregory Daniel as I lied all about him and how he was in on the conspiracy.
It was very well executed. You especially. There were several people in on the conspiracy. My wife was in on it, and never did I suspect for a moment, you know, from her.
So what else is she hiding?
And yes, exactly. but you, oh, so cleverly, you're like, I think I may be getting this award. And I'm like, well, is that a big deal for you? You know, and you're like, yeah, you know, it's like a life goal. And are you going to be there to support me? Well, you know, of course I'm going to be there. You got to say, you can't be like, no, because I don't want to have to carry a suit. You know, because I don't want to go because I don't want to have to bring a suit.
It's really the bottom line when you go to a convention when you're traveling speaking is are you going to go to the awards ceremony or not? It's like, do I really want to bring an extra garment bag so that I can wear a suit to this?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's the thing. And you got to have extra shoes. And now with extra shoes, it's not all going to fit in your normal bag. So now it's a whole new packing nightmare when you've got to bring a suit and shoes, etc. And I normally don't really compete, so I'm not up for any of the print awards. So I normally don't go. I'm like, everybody goes to the awards banquet, and then I go have a nice dinner and or whatever and hang out, and then I see everybody at the bar after. And y'all did a complete conspiracy to make sure that you had to not only get me there, but you had to get me there in a good suit, because left to my own devices, I would have worn jeans and a sports coat.
Unlike, interesting enough, I do want to point out that Rich Newell, previous recipient of the National Awards, head of the International Photographic Competition, who was there judging at the state convention, he lives in Illinois, was in the back of the room wearing a polo, and this is like a formal, like ladies are in ball gowns, men are in suits,
right.
Wearing a polo shirt tucked into a really snazzy pair of mustard colored cargo pants.
Yeah. But in his defense, he was at Disney all day, and then he said, I thought I was just going to be in the back of the room in the dark watching. I didn't know they were going to call us up there.
And then when they're giving the national award, they do this at every convention I've ever been to in every state. When they give the national award, they have all of the previous recipients in the room who've been awarded the national award to come up, and then they all kind of high-five the new recipient. That's how it's done.
Which was very cool because several of my friends who have won this award were here for judging. They're not even actually in the state of Florida. Rich was one, Mary Fitz-Taylor, Jamie Hayes. So not only did I get all of these great people from the state of Florida who have won the award up there, but I had other people from PPA National who have won the award who were also there. So, I can't underestimate how much it meant to me. It was quite surprising, and you were the loudest. Thank you for that.
Yeah. And as Rich walked right by me to go up to where they were given the award, the only thing I said was, nice shorts, like as loud as I possibly could. So thanks, Rich, for really classing up the joint. So we have a lot to talk about. First and foremost, do we want to get into the Canon EOS R announcement first, or do we want to save that till the end?
We're almost at the point where we get into that. That might be the rest of the show. I mean, that's a big announcement. I mean, we've talked about this a lot. We talked about it a little bit when we did the live show, but we haven't really done a show on this camera, and we've been talking about this camera now for over a year. We really have to get in-depth on this a little bit. We have to talk about this camera.
Well, before we do that, a couple of other things that are happening in the world of photography. We'll talk about real quick. Is the Profoto announced the B10, which is like...
Also, keep in mind that today's Wednesday. We're doing another one of these in like 4 days.
So
we don't have to cover everything right now.
Look, this is a hot scoop. I'm just trying to get it
hot
while
scoop
it's hot
out there. The new Profoto
hot scoop. It's a hot scoop. So this hot scoop is the Profoto B10, which is basically it's here. They're marketing it here. It says 5 times the power of a speed light, and it's about the size of a 70-200, and it looks honestly like a phenomenal piece of equipment. I mean, have you ever seen those? It looks about the size of a radar gun, like the ones that cops hold on the side of the road. Mm-hmm.
Sure. I hadn't thought about that, but that's a good analogy.
And it's really slick. It's really small. It's super powerful. It looks like the answer to all of the problems that you never knew you had, except that it's $1,600.
Yeah. Whoo! There's and that, in fact, is the biggest problem that I have, is the money. Yeah, the money.
Right.
And I still it's as powerful as 5 speed lights thing. That's one of those.
Good, because you could literally afford to buy 5 speed lights
you could buy way more than 5 speed lights. And also my thing with that is, like the one I have, and I use the Godox one's 8200, and it's as powerful as 3 speed lights, and giving me 2 more speed. I've yet to be in a situation with that flash where I was like, geez, I just don't have enough power. That hasn't happened to me. So
I mean, I see a light like this. Possible.
Yeah, I see a light like this. But then again, I'm using mine bare most of the time. When you're talking about putting a light into a big softbox on location, maybe it's double baffled, now needing 5 or 6 speed lights with the power you need, because you're going to knock 1 or 2 of those right off by the softbox and the baffle. Whereas I'm sometimes using a softbox, but never am I. I'm never shooting it into a 60-inch, you know, giant parabolic with a double baffle in it. And in that case, I would need more power. So I'm not saying this is a bad light by any means. I'm just saying it's not a light for me. But right. If you're a location photographer who's really bringing the gear, really setting up the fancy stuff, then you need more power, then yeah, this is definitely worth a look.
If you want to have an incredibly powerful light that you can carry on to an airplane with little fuss, and it's got a good handle for hand holding. So if you've got an assistant, it's really good for... Looks like it's going to be really good for just out there bringing light to places where it would be normally difficult to do. It's built-in rechargeable batteries, no battery pack needed. It's actually pretty cool in that way. And it looks like you can get – now, hold on. Now, this is a nice little discount. If you get the backpack that has 2 lights and all the little accessories, it's only $3,200.
Yikes. Wow.
Yikes. I mean, it doesn't look like there's a better solution for what exactly this is good for that's out there on the market right now. It really doesn't. As far as the level of power and portability, doesn't exist, as far as I know, anywhere else. However, that price is just prohibitive. I mean, this isn't going to be, to me, I don't know, if you've already sunk in a bunch of money to sets of Profotos or Godoxes or speed lights, I couldn't justify coming up with another $3,200 to get 2 of these things to take with me on the job.
What would it cost you to get 2 Paul Buff 800s and a little Vagabond packs for them? I don't think you'd spend as much as you would for this. And those are
About $1,200.
And those are studio strobes too. I mean, not that I think that this is, if you're going to get something like this, this becomes your strobes. Period. Your studio, outside of studio, these are your full time. These are your full time strobes.
Yeah, this could absolutely work as a studio light. It just happens to also be fantastic for taking on location.
What I don't understand is it so many people making these newer lights? The prices are going up. And then there's other companies that are making lights, and the prices are going drastically lower. And I don't understand why they can't, you know, how is it that this company over here is making these lights so much cheaper?
Just give it another year, and Godox will have reverse engineered this and made a version that's $400 or $500. You know, like, it's like if you're looking for something similar that's 1/4 of the price, Godox makes the 8200s, which are exceptional little lights. I don't think that they have quite as many options in the modifier department. I don't think they're as easy to hold because of the way that they're designed. Like,
right.
They obviously don't have a handle like this. But if you're looking for very portable, powerful lights that have close to this range, I think like the average speed light, like an SB900 or a 580EX, I think that the Godox 8200 is about 2.5 times as powerful as one of those. Is that about?
Say the Godox 8200 is about the equivalent of 3 speed lights. But see, here's the thing. You go, well, 5 speed lights, versus 3, 5, so much more power. That's not even one stop.
That's not a full stop.
That's not even a full stop of power. So how many times are you in a situation where you're saying to yourself, oh, I just need 3/4 of a stop more and that'd be okay?
Well, you could
That's never my case. It's always I need 3 stops
You could buy 3 or 4
more
of them for the price of one of these. And in addition to that, I will also say that having the ability to have more than 1 or 2 lights to be able to afford for the same amount of money.
There you go.
5 or 6 or 7 lights. You could do a lot more, light a bigger room, light more subjects, have more lights from more angles. And so
for $500, for $500, you could buy 2 Godox 8200s and have 600. I mean, have the equivalent of 6 speed lights.
Yeah.
And, only be at a third of the price.
Right. And they're just as smaller even than this. And so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. I think that Profoto makes some of the best quality lights, and they look really cool. My favorite thing is how cool they look. They're so
simple. Yeah, they do
and
look
sleek.
Very cool.
They are the best looking lights in the photography industry,
yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
They are the coolest. And everybody I know who uses them swears up and down that they're the best lights they've ever had. And so I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying this is a premium product, and this is for somebody who really doesn't care how much money they spend on stuff. They just want to have the coolest, best
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, it's very cool. Very cool.
But for the rest of us, we're going to be seeing what comes out of China in the over the next few months. I'll stick with my Canon speed lights. They are great for me.
When it comes to lights and stuff like that, I am very much of the buy the cheap stuff, and then if it breaks or goes bad, replace it, because the technology is always changing, et cetera,
right.
et cetera. Where I'm exactly the opposite is glass. When it comes to glass, I'm exactly the opposite. Buy the very best, super expensive lenses, and then use them for 20 years.
All right.
I'm at two completely opposite ends of the spectrum. I buy cheap flashes. I buy expensive glass. Because I bought my glass 10 years ago, and I'm still using it, and there's no reason for me to change. I have all Canon L-series glass, and there's nothing new under the sun that's better than what I'm using. It's certainly not worth that upgrade, worth buying new. So I think that's where you really get your money's worth. Some things in life are worth the money: shoes, your mattress, leather upholstery in your car, and your and your glass on your lenses.
Mm-hmm.
And your lenses. Those are worth the money.
And a dentist. Pay the dentist.
Yes, a good dentist is definitely worth the money.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. What would be the most, like if a camera came out that had the best version of every kind of feature, highest quality sensor, better in every way, because I know you're shooting with the 5 series Canon, and so you're and when you buy one of those new, you're going to pay about $3,500
right.
or so, 32 to 35. So what if someone came out with a medium format camera that is mirrorless, that is close to that price range? How much do you think?
How much
you would pay for?
How
a
much
body
would I pay
that
for
would do,
it?
That would do everything better than what you've got now and be lighter.
What do you mean? Here's the thing, though. What do you mean by better? Because here's my
higher resolution images, faster focusing lenses, lower noise, lighter weight, more frames per second. I don't know, just all the better features, higher like 4K full frame video, whatever, all the bells and whistles.
The problem is it has to be so much better that it's a game changer for me to switch at this point, because we're at that point now where, remember, for a while it was like you buy a computer and then a year later the computers that are out are 3 times as fast as the computer that you bought a year ago.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
We're at that point where you buy a computer and 5 years later, the computers haven't changed that much because the technology has finally caught up, And now
we're bottlenecking on processor technology.
They're moving slower in how they can make things drastically better.
Yeah, from 1995 to 2005, the difference in processor speed was exponential. But the difference between like 2008 and 2018 isn't that
right.
much.
And that's the same situation we're at with cameras, is that we're at a point now where there just are not huge leaps being made every year in camera technology. So if you buy a good new camera, two or three years later, the latest new camera is not going to be that much better. I mean, you look at the 5D Mark III versus the 5D. Oh my God, it's you know, apples and oranges. But you look at the 5D III versus the 5D IV. You know, there's it's better. It's
strongly
I know you disagree.
Disagree.
I know it's better, but I'm just saying it's not as much of a difference.
Well, I do want to point out that Fuji has announced the GFX 50R, which is the cheapest digital format camera maybe ever made. In addition to that, it is mirrorless. And so it's got some...
The cheapest medium format camera.
Yes, medium format. And it's mirrorless. And it has all of those great things that you love about the Fuji cameras. But in addition, the price point is supposed to be around $4,500.
Right.
Whereas previously, you know, the Fujifilm mirrorless medium format was around $6,000. So they're making a better version. And that was the GFX 50S.
You're saying $4,500? Because I'm hearing, well, okay, yeah, with kit.
The body would be $4,500.
Yeah, because someone I've got, there's other rumors that it's going to be closer to 36.
Wow. Like, now that's
that the $4,500 one will be with a bundled lens.
I feel like Fuji is the little guy nipping at the heels that people don't talk about as much.
Right.
And you know, when I go overseas, like I've spoken for the SWPP, the group in England, they're like sort of the British PPA. They have a lot of Fuji users. They're very, like, the pros are very Fuji heavy, and they love these more affordable Fuji medium format as well as the ASPC chip Fujis. Like the XT3 is coming out.
Right.
I was just
right.
speaking to a guy the other day, you know, a guy I know, a photographer who shoots all his professional work on an ASPC Fuji censored camera.
Yeah, and their new camera, the XT3, cheaper than the XT2.
Right.
That's what's another thing. Usually it's, you know, every time there's the new Mark V comes out, it's going to be more expensive than the Mark IV was.
Mm-hmm. XT3 looks like a good camera, and you posted, DP Review did a really great comprehensive video and stills review on the XT3 recently, if you want to see what that's all about. But I am impressed that we're going to be getting – oh, here we go. I am looking at this. It is looks like the body might be $3,600.
$3,600. So you'd have to already be a Fuji shooter and have lenses in order to take advantage of that. You know, otherwise you got to buy lenses. But still, $3,600. We're talking 5D Mark III, 5D Mark IV price now for medium format.
For medium format, yeah.
The real question is this: how much value is there in a medium format sensor versus full frame? Now,
totally depends on what you do.
Because in
totally
the old days, medium format negatives were markedly different than full frame. But nowadays, because of the advances that they're making, I don't think you're seeing as big a difference between medium format, full frame, crop, micro four thirds. That they're getting so good at packing the pixels onto the smaller chips that the question becomes, you know, are we still hanging on to this idea that the bigger chip is so much better? I need to see. Show me that a medium format is really, like, you put the medium format picture up next to the full frame picture, and it's like, oh, well, it's, wow, no doubt about it. Wow, medium.
Well,
there are a couple of things.
There are a couple of things that, one, you have the ability to have a much larger resolution image. So you're going to get a medium format.
Because you can put more pixels on that chip.
Yeah, you can, and not only that, but like you have a camera like the like a full frame, like the 5DS, the 5DSR. Those are probably, I think they are the highest resolution full frame mirrorless cameras, and they take absolutely incredible images, and are even being used by commercial photographers as a much more affordable alternative than shooting medium format, because medium format cameras have always been prohibitively expensive for the most part, and including the digital backs for the existing film cameras and stuff. And I know that a lot of photographers that shoot commercially, and they'll shoot Nikon, they'll shoot Canon, they'll shoot Sony, and then when they book a big gig, like a magazine shoot or something, they'll rent the medium format camera rather than outlay $20,000, $30,000.
Well, see, that's the other side of that. And they're so expensive, and then you get it, and then still 4 or 5 years from now, it's going to be almost obsolete compared to what the latest and greatest is. And having something that you spent $3,000 on that's obsolete in 5 years not quite as painful as spending $20,000 on it.
Right.
You know, and having it be obsolete.
I tell you what, I'd be very interested to see file comparisons. But one of the other things is if you have a smaller sensor and you're having to pack more transistors onto that sensor in order to get that higher resolution, like the 5DS and 5DSR, the camera can be, and this is not a fault in the design, this is just a fact of nature, can be prone more to ghosting and blurring because there's so many more transistors.
It's harder to keep it steady.
It's harder to keep it steady. So when you're shooting stuff, it's not exactly a camera that you would want to be necessarily using for sports or action, but for really high quality. Like if you want to print something that's 20 feet tall and is going to look really, really badass, you know, that's what these are really for. But I'm interested to see how it turns out, see if they cut what features they do and don't cut out, because getting that price point, it's hard to imagine them being able to produce that at a profit.
I know. No. But I mean, the only thing, it's just that the chip is bigger, right? And so I mean, everything else is just standard camera. Cameras all work the same.
Bigger.
So then the question becomes, when you buy a camera, how much of your cost is just the chip?
The sensor.
The sensor, right. The sensor.
Yeah.
How much of the camera cost is just the sensor? Because all they're doing really is changing the sensor. Everything else they're putting on the cameras is stuff they put on every camera.
Well, I mean, you can have a different processor, and you can have a different sensor, and then the mount. I mean, there's lots of things that affect the cost of it, including the material the body's made of. Maybe they went cheaper. They went to, like, aluminum from a
right.
magnesium
I get that.
Or something.
I get that. But again, the sensor is the main difference. And so I would love to know, in a typical camera, like, break out the cost of the parts. How much does the sensor cost?
No idea.
Yeah. I don't know.
No, if you're listening and you know, please.
Is it the most expensive part of the camera? I don't know.
It's got to be up there. I know that with some technology, the type of screen on the back can be very expensive.
If it's 4K Gorilla Glass and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that can add quite a lot to it. Anyway, so keep an eye on that. That's something that's interesting coming out for you Fuji shooters or people who are Fuji curious.
The biggest problem that I have with Fuji and Olympus and so forth is not are they as good as Canon and Nikon, etc., but you are always going to be the last person to get aftermarket products that are designed for your camera. So
correct.
When, you know, Godox comes out with a new flash, it's going to be for the Nikon and the Canon right off the bat.
We've got the Nikon and Canon controllers that are coming out 2 weeks after an announcement, and the Fuji adapter will be in 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. That's the biggest problem with, like, Fuji and Olympus and Pentax and Minolta and all and so forth, is that the people who are making accessories, they don't make them for you because there's not enough of you. So they're going
to
and that's and I love my Fuji. And I have toyed many times looking at the other Fujis. I wonder if I could ever make the switch. And I'm always like, oh, but, you know, as soon as I do that, someone's going to come out with some huge, great new thing for Canon and Nikon shooters.
So let's talk about great new things from Canon. And we'll switch over and finish up by talking about the EOS R that was announced in Hawaii and just last week. With some cool features, some stuff that maybe people thought should have been there that wasn't there, some kind of innovative stuff. So quickly run down, just Bure, your general, just give me like a general feeling, your synopsis of how you feel about it.
My general feeling is that it is a fine camera, and that if you are buying a new camera and looking to get into the business, that it's a fine camera. But that if you have a really good DSLR already, that it is not worth the upgrade at this time. However, if you are at the point where you are ready for an upgrade, then I would absolutely look at this as much as I would look at the 5D Mark IV or the Nikon D850, etc. Yeah, I think it definitely can hold a candle to all of those things, and of course it brings many things to the table that a DSLR does not bring to the table. Articulating screen, mirrorless, completely quiet, eye tracking, focus, touch focus, built-in Wi-Fi, all that kind of stuff that you're not necessarily going to get in the top-of-the-line DSLRs right now. And that's fantastic. There's a lot of cons as well. I don't think it's a game changer. And I actually had one in my hands this weekend.
Oh, yeah, because old
Lindsay Adler had
it
one.
To Florida. Yeah.
Yeah, she's a Canon Explorer of Light, so they gave her one, and she brought it, and I actually had it in my hands, and it felt good, and it looked good, and I liked it, but as I have suspected, and I was afraid of, one of the problems that we're seeing with the mirrorless is that when I grabbed it and wrapped my fingers around, my fingers were constantly scraping the barrel of the lens, because we're making the body smaller, But the lens is not smaller. So the distance between the grip and the lens has gotten smaller. And if you're a guy with big hands, now it becomes, you know, I always complain about this big brick of a camera that I carry around. And then you give me one that isn't a brick, and I'm complaining because I can't hold it.
Right.
And so I'm beginning to realize that I need the brick.
What's it going to take to please you?
Yeah. I mean, my pinky does not fit on the grip. It comes off the bottom. So you got to put the battery grip on it to do that. And once you put the battery grip on it, it's no longer small.
Right.
So you're losing the fact that it's small. And it weighed every bit. I mean, I wouldn't put it on a scale, but when I picked it up, it felt in my arm no different than picking up my 5D
Mark III. Pretty comparable. Yeah, the weight was, the lens sizes, yeah.
Especially with the battery grip on there.
Well, I think I've been kind of obsessively looking at the details and watching reviews and what people thought. And I think this is a pretty great step. I think it's for who it's for. I'm going to get to that.
Who's it for?
Damn it. I'm going to tell you.
Stop your train of thought and answer my question now.
Okay. I think that Canon has a much larger market in the content creator, vlogger, YouTuber universe
Is it vlogger or vlogger?
Vlog. I just say vlogger. Okay. Because vlogger sounds, I don't know.
But we don't know.
Reminds me of a Star Trek movie. Anyway, Viger.
Yes, Viger. Nice callback. Nice callback to the 80s.
You're welcome.
With the original Star Trek, the motion picture. I applaud you, sir.
When Scotty, before Scotty was fat.
Yes.
Skinny Scotty.
Yes.
So I think that this is definitely, they're showing they've got a handle on the technology. They've been testing out certain things in other models, like it's got the articulating screen from the 6D Mark II, and it's got the LCD focus points, 5,000 and something focus points you get to choose by moving your thumb around the LCD panel on the back, which is very, very cool. It's got the eye tracking, and it's got some really great features that they've been testing in other mirrorless and non-mirrorless models. I think that it's very comparable to something sort of between a 6D Mark II and a 5D Mark IV. It's got better features in some ways and not as good in others. For me, at the price point that it's at, which is what, $2,200?
I think
this is a it's going to be great for video because Canon's face follow and eye tracking for video and autofocus for video is probably the best in DSLRs and in mirrorless. But I haven't. That's without having ever done too much experimentation with other models. But I think it's really for people who are getting serious. I think it's for vloggers and content creators, and it's a very affordable option if that's your deal with the video and the options that it has. What really I think that it's lacking as far as some like a pro wedding shooter, I really believe that that mirrorless cameras are made for pro wedding shooters. Higher frames per second for those moments where you have to burst fire. It's got, you can see the exposure right in the electronic viewfinder. And I've heard that the EVF on the Canon is unbelievable. Like, it's nearly like looking through an optical viewfinder. Yeah. It's so clear and accurate.
The electronic viewfinder cannot be discounted. When I'm even at a wedding, when I pull the Fuji out for the fun of it, to be able to see my exposure in real time.
Yeah, it means you never waste an exposure. It means you never have...
No.
Imagine
there's no chimping.
You go home with 1,000 images that you photographed at a wedding, and you don't have to adjust the exposure on a single image because you nailed them.
No. If you're shooting flash, yes, because you can't... It doesn't help you when you're shooting flash because everything's dark. But if you're shooting natural light, then absolutely. You've got your exposure nailed every time.
What I'm getting at is this is for wedding shooters who shoot mainly available light.
Right.
And or let's say for me, if I had a mirrorless like the EOS R in my kit, I would have my 5D Mark IV, and I would probably shoot all my strobe stuff with that. I would have the EOS R on my spider holster on my belt, and when I had to bust out to shoot available light, because it would imagine how fast it speeds up your workflow, where all of your available light images, you don't have to do in a single adjustment to the exposure because you nailed it if you're a good photographer and you've been doing it a long time, you can mostly nail your pictures when you take them. But this is like you can have 100% exposure accuracy.
And I'll tell you another thing about this great is if you're shooting like JPEG and RAW to the card, you can shoot and have the JPEGs be in black and white. And what you see in the EVF is black and white. And I have discovered that when it comes to nailing exposure, if you're looking at it in black and white in real time, you tend to really nail that exposure much better because you're not distracted by the colors.
All you're seeing is highlight and
all
shadow.
All you see is highlight and shadow. And so that's what I do. I shoot on my with my camera in JPEG black and white, but I have RAW backed up in color if I need it. But man, shooting in black, and you're more prone to go, you know what? I want to underexpose this a little bit for the mood. You know,
I think that what you're really missing though on this is a pro wedding shooter that has a camera with two card slots is not going to buy this camera and use it as their main camera.
That's the huge elephant in the room.
5 frames per second is not fast enough for a sports or action camera.
It's a single card slot.
And the not taking advantage of the full sensor for video, not because 4K is any less resolved on a crop sensor, but because it changes the focal length of your lenses effectively. So it means that, like, to get a wider shot, you have to have almost a couple of extra lenses just to shoot video at the same things. And so that's pretty common. I think, though, that I'm 100% positive that in the next year, you will see Canon using a lot of this technology and coming out with a pro-centric mirrorless camera. I think this is a shot across the bow. It's a first test. All the technology looks solid. My favorite things, I think the strongest thing it's got going is it's got the fastest telephoto lens ever produced. It's got a 28-70 f2, which is really, really impressive.
And affordable.
And no, yes, $3,000.
$3,000. $3,000. For a 28-70, we're not talking about 7200.
Right.
28-70 with my standard go-to lens, $3,000.
Just remember, it is the only one like it in the world right now, so it can be $3,000. So that's just keep that in mind. The other thing they come out with is the different lens mount adapters for the EF lenses, and this is where it gets really clever. You can have a lens mount adapter that's just a straight up. Will convert your lens, and it'll work seamlessly on the body if it's a Canon lens. Then you've got another lens mount adapter that gives you a control ring. So for video people, you can set that to do a multiple different things, including aperture, ISO, so that you can change things on the go without having to get your eyeball in the viewfinder or use the LCD screen. You can just make that control ring. And so that's really useful.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't the new lenses for this camera, don't they have a control ring built into them?
Right, but you would not need the adapter
for. And that's really
for.
Smart on their part. They're like, okay, we're going to give you an adapter that also gives you this functionality that comes in the new lenses on your old lenses, and that's very smart. Even if you don't need it, and I would never use it.
No, I can't think of a situation in which I would, but you don't know until it's in your hands, and you go, you know what, that's really useful.
Right.
So it may be. Like if you're an aperture priority shooter, and this will just kind of adjust your ISO or something, you can set it to do that. It might be actually really cool to have. But the upside-down ketchup bottle of the camera world has been invented in this system, which is it now has a lens mount adapter that gives you the ability to put different filters at the back of the lens. Now, think about this. What I mean by the upside down ketchup bottle is why didn't we invent this before?
Perfect analogy. That's a perfect analogy. It is the upside down ketchup bottle where you go, really? Why didn't someone think about this 50 years
ago? So you're saying that instead of buying a different filter, a different UV filter or a different variable neutral density filter for every lens in my kit, you mean the whole time we could have had one size that's the back mount of the camera, so one filter will fit all my lenses?
Right. If you're shooting with multiple lenses and using a neutral density filter that time, you've got to have one on each lens that you're swapping out. Or you've got to sit there and swap that sucker out on every lens, which you may not want
to
do.
Like if you switch from your 16-35 to your 70-200, that's two different diameters.
So now instead of putting a filter on the lens, you're putting a filter on the camera.
Well, you're putting it in the adapter.
Right, but you're putting it on the camera. Anything that goes on that camera gets this filter.
Which is actually really, really clever. And there's one other little piece of technology. The reason I call it the upside-down ketchup bottle is it took 200 years to invent the upside-down ketchup bottle. Like, why?
Why?
Because,
why?
Like,
it's a great analogy.
They finally made it easy to get ketchup out. But the other thing is that mirrorless cameras needed, which I believe this is the first one to have, is that when you turn the camera off and take the lens off, the shutter closes to protect the sensor from dust when the lens isn't on the body. And that's actually a really clever little innovation that I like.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that mirrorless cameras didn't already have that, because we have that built into a DSLR because we have the mirror. So the mirror blocks the sensor. But on a mirrorless camera, other manufacturers, when you take the lens off, you're just looking at the sensor right there?
I believe so.
That's a no bueno for me on the beach.
Canon's done some pretty cool and creative stuff here. I don't think this was intended to be. Even at their launch, they were like, this isn't going to replace your main camera. This is part of your kit. I think it's a soft introduction to this technology, and I think they're incorporating cool stuff in it. The thing that I think is the biggest bummer and the biggest missed opportunity as far as talking point isn't the one card slot. It isn't anything else, because I think it looks like a great camera, and everybody I know that's using it is really taken with it, is that they didn't put an image stabilizer in the body of the camera.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, if you have the Nikon Z series has a five-stop image stabilizer, so now every lens that you put on that camera has, and it also gives the ability, without an image stabilizer, you can make smaller lenses. You can make lighter lenses because you don't have to put that stabilizer in it.
Well, here's the thing, though. I mean, yeah, I get that. It also doesn't have a joystick, which I hate that it doesn't have a thumb joystick.
Which you don't need because of the LCD screen.
Yeah, but if it's up to your eye, can you really touch the screen?
I do it with my M5 that's sitting right over here on my desk. That's where I first discovered the technology. It takes a slight adjustment.
You've gotten a feel for it. You've got a feel for where my thumb goes on that screen to touch
it's
the
better.
Thing I want to
it's
focus on.
It's faster.
Okay.
It's
all right. I'll give you that. But here's
totally
the thing.
Totally replaces the joystick in a good way.
Here's the thing. You're like, oh, no image stabilization and everything. But again, what's the price on this camera?
$2,200.
You know, yeah. Is it? You know, I mean, wow. I mean, yeah. It's not. If this camera was $3,500, you know, or $4,000, I'd be like, you've got to be kidding me that you don't have two card slots. And you know, but we keep saying this camera isn't the be all end all. Well, the price point would tell you that it's not supposed to be the be all end all.
Right.
And I think we got to say the same thing about the Nikon. We talked about the Nikon a lot, and I talked the negatives of Nikon. I don't remember what's the price point on that Nikon.
They have two different ones, the Z6 and the Z7. I believe they're about $2,000 and $3,500 respectively. So it's just
okay,
a little bit under the EOS R.
I better get two card slots and image stabilization.
Which you don't.
But at $2,200, well now, okay, this camera's obviously not meant to be the number one main camera that a full-time wedding shooter shoots.
It's similarly priced to the 6D Mark II, which also doesn't have two card slots.
Right,
you know?
So, yeah, I get that. I am surprised, though, that it's one card slot and they didn't use those new mega Sony cards.
Yeah, well, if I was in the market right now, I can tell you that I would consider adding this into my kit because I think it has some cool advantages. And if for nothing else, then to start building up my line of the new lenses because that's really – the lens technology is the thing that's radically changing with mirrorless cameras is that now you're going to have less chromatic aberration. You're going to have less barrel distortion. You're going to have sharper images edge to edge that's only going to be possible with the mirrorless systems. I think the lenses are going to be – it's going to be the first really significant change in the in lens quality for any of the systems in a very long time because mirrorless allows you to have – a lot more in focus. They're sharper. They have less distortion. It's really cool. And so that's something that, as a pro, that I would definitely not want to be missing out on. And I know that down the road they will be coming out with a pro body that I am definitely going to want. That is definitely going to be a camera that will be my main camera.
And then you already have the lenses.
That's it. So this would be a good reason to start getting into their lens lineup. Like, I think that their 24-105 f/4 kit lens looks great, and it's and you know, I rarely have the opportunity or need to shoot more than f/4. So that would make a great, you know, a lot of my work is commercial, and you know, f/4 is just something you don't do a whole lot.
Right.
So you know, for the purposes of it, I think that would be a good start to start getting into that lens lineup and getting used to the new system. But not in the market at the moment, but I wouldn't be against it. So I think it's a good move, and I'm sticking where I'm at for the moment.
I don't think they have a good, like, 7,200 millimeter zoom for this yet, do they? They have, like, a...
No.
Yeah.
Mm-mm, that's...
Because, see, I could see that. I could see if they had that big zoom, which I use, especially with all the beach weddings I shoot, I use that all the time, then... I would be tempted to do what you're saying. I'd be like, okay, 2,200. Nah, that's not going to break the bank. And I'll put that lens on it. And then I'll start shooting beach weddings and with that camera as my long lens and my Fuji as my wide. Or you know, my 5D Mark III is my wide. And I use that for my long lens because that's all, you know, close up at the altar stuff and people coming down the aisle stuff. And for that, having the electronic viewfinder would be great. Because,
champion,
yeah,
absolutely.
And I would love that. And I do so much. I do so much 200 millimeter natural light work when I'm working on the beach. So
right.
I would be tempted to carry two cameras just to use that one for that work. And then, as you said, start down that road of getting the lenses for it, and
There's no question that every wedding pro at least is going to be switching to a mirrorless system with Canon. If you stay with Canon, guarantee you we're all going to be switching.
Yeah, well,
mirrorless
is the future. 10 years from now, you will talk. People who are still shooting with DSLR will be looked at the way we look at people shooting with film.
Right. Like it's cute.
Yeah, it's cute, but why would you not be using this stuff? Right, it's so much better.
So it's happening. The future is coming. And so it would be a good if you're in the market or you're looking to add a backup camera or you don't have a backup, this would be a great backup camera. It works with all your stuff that you've already got, and it'll get you on the road to starting to work with the new lens system. Or if you're looking at starting to create serious content for a vlog or something, that articulating screen, it cannot be underestimated how good it is to have that screen that totally flips around. And I don't believe that any of the other mirrorless full frames have a fully articulated
That's
screen.
Actually a big thing for me because I have to make videos all the time for yes. PPA. You know, oh, you're going to be speaking, make a video. You're going to be doing this thing, make a video for us. And I go into setups to make the video, and I make them with my phone because I can see what I'm doing. And I'm, right. If I had a camera where I could flip that screen around to selfie mode and see what I'm doing, because I'm always doing it alone. I don't have someone working my camera. Unlike you, Mr. Hughes, I do not have a dedicated guys who are experts at video doing my videos for me. It's just me.
I do most of my stuff myself, yeah. As a matter of
but,
fact.
So that's another thing that would be a big bonus. That would be if I was thinking about getting this camera and trying it out at work, I'd be like, and here's a nice caveat. I can also start using it for, you know, all of the video stuff that I have to do.
Yeah, we are seriously considering adding some small time commercial video production to our studio. And so video is going to become something that we're thinking about more and more. And
I think it was funny. I was on another podcast about a week or so ago as a guest. And Jim Ferrara, long time listener
to the
show.
What's the name of that podcast so people can go listen to it?
Wedding Photographers Unite.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've heard that before.
And Jim, he shoots he shoots with the Sony, and he's hard into the Sony camp. Admittedly, for a good reason. Everyone will tell you that right now the Sony cameras are just the best mirrorlesses you can buy. But it doesn't have the fully articulating screen, and he was arguing that he doesn't want a fully articulating screen; that it's just an invitation to snap off. And that having the screen...
Well, you don't have to use it.
I know. That's what I was saying. But he was saying but having the one that just pops down where you can hold it over your head or pops left and right so you can hold it out to the side, that's everything he needs and that the articulating screen would just be more of a hassle. And I'm like, A, you don't have to use it. And so if you don't have to use it, how is it... No, I don't get that at all.
Yeah, I don't know that I can see it. I've said that as much myself as that I'm as likely to snap it off. But really, to be honest, I'm as likely to break my stuff no matter what because I'm really I'm really clumsy and not good with my equipment.
All right, it's time to wrap this thing up.
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Don't forget that you can find us online. Just go to facebook.com/photobombpodcast. You can email us. Our email address is questions@photobombpodcast.com. You can find Gary at HughesForYourEddy.com. You can find me at BooRayPerry.com. And we will be back again, hopefully, like within 4 or 5 days with a new episode on Monday. We're going to try and get this one out right away and then come right back with another episode as soon as possible and make it up to you this stuttering week or so that we had technical difficulties.
Correct. We're doing our best all right. Here. Look, it's free. Calm down.
Yeah, we'll see you back here soon.
See you later.